Chapter 101. Marriage bells, and little more than a month after that meeting on the hill on the rimy morning in departing November, Adam and Dinah were married. It was an event much thought of in the village. All Mr. Burge's men had a holiday, and all Mr. Poyser's, and most of those who had a holiday appeared in their best clothes at the wedding. I think there was hardly an inhabitant of Hayslope specially mentioned in this history, and still resident in the parish on this November morning who was not either in church, to see Adam and Dinah married, or near the church door, to greet them as they came forth. Mrs. Irwin and her daughters were waiting at the churchyard gates in their carriage, for they had a carriage now, to shake hands with the bride and bridegroom, and wish them well. And in the absence of Miss Lydia Donathorne at Bath, Mrs. Best, Mr. Mills, and Mr. Craig had felt it incumbent on them to represent the family at the Chase on the occasion. The churchyard walk was quite lined with familiar faces, many of them faces that at first looked at Dinah when she preached on the green. And no wonder they showed this eager interest on her marriage morning, for nothing like Dinah and the history which had brought her and Adam Bede together had been known at Hayslope within the memory of man. Bessie Cranage, in her neatest cap and frock, was crying, though she did not exactly know why, for, as her cousin Wiry Ben, who stood near her, judiciously suggested, Dinah was not going away, and if Bessie was in low spirits, the best thing for her to do was to follow Dinah's example and marry an honest fellow who was ready to have her. Next to Bessie, just within the church door, there were the Poyser children, peeping round the corner of the pews to get a sight of the mysterious ceremony. Toddy's face wearing an unusual air of anxiety at the idea of seeing cousin Dinah come back looking rather old, for in Toddy's experience no married people were young. I envy them all the sight they had when the marriage was fairly ended, and Adam led Dinah out of church. She was not in black this morning, for her Aunt Poyser would by no means allow such a risk of incurring bad luck, and had herself made a present of the wedding dress, made all of gray, though in the usual Quaker form, for on this point Dinah could not give way. So the lily face looked out with sweet gravity from under a gray Quaker bonnet, neither smiling nor blushing, but with lips trembling a little under the weight of solemn feelings. Adam, as he pressed her arm to his side, walked with his old erectness and his head thrown rather backward, as if to face all the world better. But it was not because he was particularly proud this morning, as is the wont of bridegrooms, for his happiness was of a kind that had little reference to men's opinion of it. There was a tinge of sadness in his deep joy. Dinah knew it, and did not feel aggrieved. There were three other couples, following the bride and bridegroom. First, Martin Poyser, looking as cheery as a bright fire on this rimy morning, led quiet Mary Birch, the bridesmaid. Then came Seth serenely happy, with Mrs. Poyser on his arm. And last of all Bartle Massey, with Lisbeth in a new gown and bonnet, too busy with her pride in her son and her delight in possessing the one daughteress he had desired to devise a single pretext for complaint. Bartle Massey had consented to attend the wedding at Adam's earnest request, under protest against marriage in general, and the marriage of a sensible man in particular. Nevertheless, Mr. Poyser had a joke against him after the wedding dinner, to the effect that in the vestry he had given the bride one more kiss than was necessary. Behind this last couple came Mr. Irwin, glad at heart over this good morning's work of joining Adam and Dinah. For he had seen Adam in the worst moments of his sorrow, and what better harvest from that painful seed time could there be than this? The love that had brought hope and comfort in the hour of despair, the love that had found its way to the dark prison cell, and to poor Eddie's darker soul, this strong gentle love was to be Adam's companion and helper till death. There was much shaking of hands mingled with odd bless yous and other good wishes to the four couples at the churchyard gate, Mr. Poyser answering for the rest with unwonted vivacity of tongue, for he had all the appropriate wedding day jokes at his command. And the women, he observed, could never do anything but put finger and eye at a wedding. Even Mrs. Poyser could not trust herself to speak as the neighbors shook hands with her, and Lisbeth began to cry in the face of the very first person who told her she was getting young again. Mr. Joshua Rann, having a slight touch of rheumatism, did not join in the ringing of the bells this morning, and, looking on with some contempt at these informal greetings which required no official cooperation from the clerk, began to hum in his musical bass, "Oh, what a joyful thing it is," by way of preluding a little to the effect he intended to produce in the wedding psalm next Sunday. "That's a bit of good news to cheer Arthur," said Mr. Irwin to his mother, as they drove off. "She'll write to him the first thing when we get home." Epilogue. It is near the end of June, in 1807. The workshops have been shut up half an hour or more in Adam Beat's timber yard, which used to be Jonathan Burge's, and the mellow evening light is falling on the pleasant house with the buff walls and the soft gray thatch, very much as it did when we saw Adam bringing in the keys on that June evening 9 years ago. There is a figure we know well, just come out of the house, and shading her eyes with her hands as she looks for something in the distance, for the rays that fall on her white borderless cap and her pale auburn hair are very dazzling. But now she turns away from the sunlight and looks towards the door. We can see the sweet pale face quite well now. It is scarcely at all altered, only a little fuller, to correspond to her more matronly figure, which still seems light and active enough in the plain black dress. "I see him, Seth," Dinah said, as she looked into the house. "Let us go and meet him. Come, Lisbeth, come with mother." The last call was answered immediately by a small fair creature with pale auburn hair and gray eyes, little more than 4 years old, who ran out silently and put her hand into her mother's. "Come, Uncle Seth," said Dinah. Aye, we're coming," Seth answered from within, and presently appeared stooping under the doorway, being taller than usual by the black head of a sturdy 2-year-old nephew, who had caused some delay by demanding to be carried on Uncle's shoulder. "Better take him on thy arm, Seth," said Dinah, looking fondly at the stout black-eyed fellow. "He's troublesome to thee so." Nay, Addie likes a ride on my shoulder. I can carry him so for a bit." A kindness which young Addie acknowledged by drumming his heels with promising force against Uncle Seth's chest. But to walk by Dinah's side and be tyrannized over by Dinah's and Adam's children was Uncle Seth's earthly happiness. "Where didst see him?" asked Seth, as they walked on into the adjoining field. "Can't catch sight of him anywhere." "Between the hedges by the roadside," said Dinah. "Saw his hat and his shoulder. There he is again." "Trust thee for catching sight of him, if he's anywhere to be seen," said Seth, smiling. "He'd like poor mother used to be. She was always on the lookout for Adam, and could see him sooner than other folks, for all her eyes got dim." "He's been longer than he expected," said Dinah, taking Arthur's watch from a small side pocket and looking at it. "It's nigh upon 7 now." "Aye, they'd have a deal to say to one another," said Seth, "and the meeting 'ud touch 'em both pretty closish. Why, it's getting on towards 8 years since they parted." "Yes," said Dinah, "Adam was greatly moved this morning at the thought of the change he should see in the poor young man, from the sickness he has undergone, as well as the years which have changed us all. And the death of the poor wanderer, when she was coming back to us, has been sorrow upon sorrow." "See, Addie," said Seth, lowering the young one to his arm now and pointing, "there's father coming at the far stile." Dinah hastened her steps, and little Lisbeth ran on at her utmost speed till she clasped her father's leg. Adam patted her head, and lifted her up to kiss her, but Dinah could see the marks of agitation on his face as she approached him, and he put her arm within his in silence. "Well, youngster, must I take you?" he said, trying to smile, when Addie stretched out his arms ready, with the usual baseness of infancy, to give up his Uncle Seth at once. Now there was some rarer patronage at hand. "It's cut me a good deal, Dinah," Adam said at last, when they were walking on. "Didst find him greatly altered?" said Dinah. "Why, he's altered and yet not altered. I should have known him anywhere. But his color's changed, and he looks sadly. However, the doctors say he'll soon be set right in his own country air. He's all sound and th inside. It's only the fever shattered him so. But he speaks just the same, and smiles at me just as he did when he was a lad. It's wonderful how he's always had just the same sort of look when he smiles. I've never seen him smile, poor young man, said Dinah. But thee wilt see him smile, tomorrow, said Adam. He asked after thee the first thing, when he began to come round, and we could talk to one another. I hope she isn't altered, apostrophe he said, I remember her face so well. I told him no, Adam continued, looking fondly at the eyes that were turned towards his, only a bit plumper, as feet stay right, to be after 7 year. I may come and see her tomorrow, mayn't I? He said, I long to tell her how I've thought of her all these years. Didst tell him I'd always used the watch? Said Dinah. Aye, and we talked a deal about thee, for he says he never saw a woman a bit like thee. I shall turn Methodist someday, he said, when she preaches out of doors, and go to hear her. And I said, nay, sir, you can't do that, for conference has forbid the women preaching, and she's given it up, all but talking to the people a bit in their houses. Ah, said Seth, who could not repress a comment on this point, and a sore pity it was o' conference. And if Dinah had seen as I did, we'd all left the Wesleyans, and joined a body that had put no bonds on Christian liberty. Nay, lad, nay, said Adam, she was right and he was wrong. There's no rule so wise, but what it's a pity for somebody or other. Most o' the women do more harm, nor good with their preaching. They've not got Dinah's gift nor her spirit, and she seen that, and she thought it right to set th example o' submitting, for she's not held from other sorts o' teaching. And I agree with her, and approve o' what she did. Seth was silent. This was a standing subject of difference rarely alluded to, and Dinah, wishing to quit it at once, said, Didst remember, Adam, to speak to Colonel Donathan the words my uncle Anand entrusted to thee? Yes, and he's going to the Hall Farm with Mr. Irwin the day after tomorrow. Mr. Irwin came in while we were talking about it, and he would have it as the Colonel must see nobody but thee tomorrow. He said, and he's in the right of it, as it'll be bad for him to have his feelings stirred with seeing many people one after another. We must get you strong and hearty, he said. That's the first thing to be done, Arthur, and then you shall have your own way. But I shall keep you under your old tutor's thumb till then. Mr. Irwin's fine and joyful at having him home again. Adam was silent a little while, and then said, It was very cutting when we first saw one another. He'd never heard about poor Hetty till Mr. Irwin met him in London, for the letters missed him on his journey. The first thing he said to me, when we'd got hold o' one another's hands was, I could never do anything for her, Adam. She lived long enough for all the suffering, and I'd thought so of the time when I might do something for her. But you told me the truth, when you said to me once, there's a sort of wrong that can never be made up for. Why, there's Mr. and Mrs. Poyser coming in at the yard gate, said Seth. So there is, said Dinah. Lisbeth, run to meet Aunt Poyser. Come in, Adam, and rest. It has been a hard day for thee. End of the Project Gutenberg text of Adam Bede. By George Eliot, number 2 in our series by George Eliot, pseudonym of Mary Ann Evans. Selected bibliography, other works by George Eliot, Scenes of Clerical Life 1857 Stories Adam Bede 1859 Novel The Mill on the Floss 1860 Novel Silas Marner 1861 Novel Romola 1863 Novel Felix Holt The Radical 1866 Novel How Lisa Loved the King 1867 Poems The Spanish Gypsy 1868 Poem Middlemarch 1872 Novel The Legend of Jubal 1874 Poem Daniel Deronda 1876 Novel Impressions of Theophrastus Such 1879 Essays a dam by Gutenberg edition.